Hello there, and welcome to episode number 131 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. All right, so it's everyone's favorite time of the year. It's time to start talking about some off-season moves for the Toronto Blue Jays. And things won't start, or ball won't really start to get rolling until after the World Series concludes, 5 days afterwards to be exact. But that gives us a few weeks here to sort of speculate as to what may transpire in over these coming months for the Blue Jays. And given the fact that they're coming off another disappointing year, another disappointing playoff exit, you have some marquee free agents potentially leaving the organization, there's going to be an opportunity here for the Blue Jays to be one of the more active teams, not only just in free agency, but also in trade discussions as well, this offseason. And if they follow down that path, they'll be doing so for a second straight offseason. And we all know how eventful last winter was for this team, where they kicked things off by trading Teoscar Hernandez to Seattle in exchange for Eric Swanson and Adam Mako, Mako, I believe is pronunciation. And then, you know, you have the big trade of Gurriel and Moreno for Varsho, which has certainly morphed into a very hot button topic amongst baseball fans this postseason. And it's easy to see why, given the type of performances that both Gurriel and Moreno have been having so far. And they're off to the World Series to face another ex-Blue Jay in Marcus Semien. And obviously there were the Kevin Kiermaier and Brandon Belt, Chris Bassett, Chad Green signings. So there's certainly going to be some movement once again for the Blue Jays this offseason, because as things currently stand right now, they have five notable players set to enter free agency next month, including Matt Chapman, Jordan Hicks, Brandon Belt, Kevin Kiermaier, and Hyunjin Ryu. But that list could grow even larger, assuming Whit Merrifield's $18 million mutual option gets declined, which I don't want to like give an absolute guarantee on something, especially during this time of the year, but I think it's safe to assume that Whit Merrifield will not earn $18 million next season, or at least he won't with the Blue Jays, especially considering it's only a $500K buyout to decline that option. So I would assume Merrifield will join that list of free agents. I don't think, however, Chad Green will, just because of how his contract is structured, where there's essentially three different ways things can go with Green. First and foremost is he has a three-year club option that the Blue Jays could decide to exercise, which would come with a $9 million AAV over those 3 years. But if that's declined, which it may or may not, I mean, Chad Green looked pretty decent after a few hiccups coming off his return from Tommy John surgery. Do I think that the Blue Jays want to commit 3 years to a 33-year-old pitcher at $9 million per season? Probably not, just knowing their MO in not paying lucrative contracts to relievers, especially ones who will be in their age 33 season next year. I have a bit of a hard time seeing them agree to something like that. But if they do decline that, Chad Green will have a one-year $6.25 million player option. And given the current environment for free agent relievers, there's a pretty good chance he knows that he would get a much better offer than that in the open market. So I would say there's a good chance that he would decline that. And then it would push, it would put the ball back in the Blue Jays court and give them a 2-year, $21 million club option, which of course would come with a $10.5 million average annual value. So you'd be paying $1.5 million more for one less year of control for Green versus that 3-year club option. So I think it ultimately would come down to what the Blue Jays prefer. Do they want to have, you know, 1 year more of flexibility, or are they good with paying a little bit more for, you know, being able to potentially, if they needed to, cut ties with Green after 2 years rather than having to wait out that final year? I think they probably choose the second year option in my mind. Unless it's somebody like, I mean, obviously Jordan Romano, but unless you're talking about an elite closer or an elite high leverage reliever, which to Green's credit, he was before undergoing Tommy John surgery, I just don't think it's a good idea to commit that type of term and money to a reliever. They're so volatile year after year. I mean, we can go up and down the list, even as recent as last year's free agency class, right? You look at the top three relievers that got paid to all stay with their respective teams in Edwin Diaz, Robert Suarez, and Rafael Montero. Neither of those three had as good of a year in 2023 as they did in 2022. And to be fair to Edwin Diaz, that was a little bit unfortunate for him. Just a very fluky injury that he sustained in the WBC that wiped him out for all of 2023. So who knows if, statistically speaking, he would have had as good of a year in 22 as he did, or in 2023 as he did in 2022. But he's also one of the better closers, if not the best, in baseball. So it's a little more justifiable in that sense. But for Suarez and Montero, I mean, neither of which performed anywhere near as good and as dominant as they did the previous year. And those were two arms that, you know, this time last winter, we were all talking about, should the Blue Jays make a run at either of them? And it's a good thing they didn't, and opted to go the route of pursuing Chad Green and ultimately trading for Jordan Hicks at the trade deadline. And obviously trading for Eric Swanson. So, again, I think Chad Green will be back on this team. To what degree, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm going to lean more towards that 2-year club option rather than the 3-year. Now, as for the chances of the rest of the free agents that the Blue Jays will have, there could be a scenario where none of them return. That's just kind of reality, really. I don't see a scenario where Whit Merrifield comes back. I think the writing was on the wall with him, and I've stated this previously, where he didn't play a whole lot down the stretch. The Blue Jays are pretty well off at middle infield, where with the way Kevin Biggio played this year, or at least in 5 of the 6 months, there's certainly a case to be made that he deserves more consistent reps all over the diamond next year. And Davis Schneider obviously needs to have a larger role heading into 2024. You have Addison Barger coming, or Elvis Martinez coming. Still have Santiago Espinal, but I have a feeling that, just given the disappointing season that he endured, the fact that he's projected to command $2.5 million through arbitration in 2024. He's got 3 years of club control left. He'll be 29 years old next season. I think there's a decent chance he either gets traded or non-tendered this winter. So that would open up a position in the infield, but I think the Blue Jays can probably aim a little bit higher than Whit Merrifield. And as well, if you cut ties with Espinal, you'd probably prefer to target somebody who could play shortstop if need be. And Biggio can obviously do that. He had been dying to get an opportunity to fill in, and he finally got his chance when Bo Bichette went down. But there aren't many players on this roster outside of Aurelvis Martinez and Biggio, obviously, that can play shortstop. So I don't really think Merrifield fits for this team anymore. He had a really nice, you know, year and a half with this squad. Was an all-star this past season, despite, you know, a very regressed second half. I think he'll land somewhere where he can be assured that he'll be able to play every day, or at least close to that type of role. And with Toronto, he's just not going to get that. And not only the fit and the role, just judging by his comments after game two of the wild card, where he essentially, in my mind, just let it all out, right? He also saw the writing on the wall, probably knew that he wouldn't be back. So I think we've seen the last of Whit Merrifield as a Toronto Blue Jay. Nevertheless, certainly appreciative of the type of performance he was able to have in 22 and 23. And I think this a similar sentiment can be applied to the rest of the free agent group too. Like, Matt Chapman is obviously the biggest name there, but he'll be the top third baseman available in free agency. And obviously the Blue Jays love his defense. There's no doubt about that, but he was a below average hitter for 5 of the 6 months of the season, right? Like, he lit the world on fire in late March and for the entire month of April. But if you look at his performance from May 1st onward, he had a WRC plus of considerably below 100. So I just don't really see, especially for a team that really needs to insert some more power in their lineup heading into 2024, you're going to have to commit a sizable contract to Matt Chapman. And sure, you'll definitely have the defense. His arm strength is definitely going to age very well, but will his range do the same? I don't know. And who's to say what type of performance you're going to get out of him offensively moving forward? And if you're committing like a 5-year deal to Chapman, you want a bit more security in that. So that's kind of why I don't see Matt Chapman returning with the Blue Jays next season. And in terms of their other free agents, Hyunjin Ryu may not return to North America at all. Like, after hearing him speak a few weeks ago to local reporters in Korea, I'm not getting the sense that he's even sure how things will play out this winter. I mean, he even said as much. So I like, especially considering that Ross Atkins basically spoke when he gave his end of year press conference. He spoke about almost all of the Blue Jays free agents in the past tense. And he later clarified and by name mentioned Hyunjin Ryu as possibly somebody who they could come back around to. But Ryu just doesn't seem like a fit for the team either anymore. Because when I look at what the Blue Jays need in the starting rotation, I think it would be more beneficial if they targeted somebody who has experience pitching out of the bullpen, which Hyunjin Ryu does not. So who knows what happens with Alek Manoah this winter, whether or not he's traded or comes back with a vengeance in 2024 and is determined to fight for a rotation spot. But, you know, I just think there's going to be healthy, or there should be healthy competition for that number five spot, right? Assuming Manoah is part of it, you'll have Bowden Francis, maybe even Ricky Tiedemann fights for that spot, or at least comes up midway through the season at some point and warrants an opportunity at the big league level. Because I think ultimately, assuming he stays healthy, Tiedemann is in line to make his major league debut in 2024. And if that happens, I think it would just make more sense to be able to have the luxury of taking your number five starter, whoever ultimately that is, and moving them to the bullpen if need be. And I think as well, it just makes sense to solidify your depth a little bit more at that starting position, so that if you run into injuries, which could very well happen next year, if you have, say, you know, a Michael Lorenzen or another, you know, a Kenta Maeda would make some sense, a veteran starting back-end starting pitcher who could work out of the bullpen if you need. And then if an injury happens, you stretch them out. But I just, you're not going to be able to do that with Ryu, right? So I don't see where, you know, both sides come together and work things out. And Brandon Belt could possibly retire this winter. I mean, we heard the rumors heading into the postseason that he, you know, was contemplating it or planning to consider it over the winter, and reaffirm that idea when speaking to the media after the playoffs ended. So who knows where things go with him, but losing Bell would definitely be a big blow to the Blue Jays, because he was arguably one of their best hitters, at least statistically speaking, this past season. There's nothing he could have given you any more than what he did on a very team-friendly, as it turned out, one-year, $9.3 million contract. So, the Blue Jays have Spencer Horwitz in the system, but, you know, you obviously need to add somebody to that competition externally to, you know, make it a healthy competition. And it'd be somewhat of a big ask to just give that role to Spencer Horwitz. So I think ultimately, whether or not Belt returns, that's an area the Blue Jays will have to address this winter. And then you have Kevin Kiermaier, who was one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball this past season, right up there with Dalton Varsho. But the Blue Jays need more offense, right? And Kevin Kiermaier did phenomenal in the expectation that you thought you were going to get out of him offensively. Like, he exceeded all expectations at the plate, especially early on in the season. My goodness, he was unbelievable, fighting for that crown as the best number nine hitter in baseball. But despite what he brings you defensively, can the Blue Jays get a little bit more upside offensively? Sure. Will they have to compromise a bit of defense? Absolutely, because there's nobody out there that they can get who is going to be as talented defensively as Kiermaier, but also provide more upside offensively. That player just doesn't exist in free agency. So, actually, there's really, like, very few people who actually fit that description, period, just in baseball. So I would love to see Kiermaier back on this team, but to me, I still think he is determined to pursue an everyday role And if the Blue Jays add a little bit more offense to their outfield, that's not really going to be available to them. So unfortunately, we're probably going to have to say goodbye to Kevin Kiermaier, despite him without a doubt being a fan favorite icon amongst the fan base, and rightly so. But that's just the position the Blue Jays are in right now. And the water is certainly murky for a guy like Jordan Hicks, who, you know, I was incredibly surprised by his arrival to the Blue Jays. Like, that blockbuster trade, just, it did not fit the MO of the Blue Jays front office. Like, not even the fact that he's a reliever and an impending free agent, but it's just, the Blue Jays don't, or they haven't historically, at least this regime hasn't, gone out and acquired high-profile rentals. And they did that at the trade deadline. And obviously, their initial intentions were to be open to extending Jordan Hicks. But it's hard to know where his head's at. I mean, we've heard some rumblings, both from Ben Nicholson-Smith and Arden Zwelling, that the Blue Jays have learned that Hicks just wasn't a good fit, and that wording is very vague. It's hard to know what they didn't like about him, whether it was his demeanor in the clubhouse or the fact that maybe Jordan Hicks just wants to try his hand at starting again. You know, like, maybe he wants to take that Seth Lugo route where, and for those of you who aren't familiar with Seth Lugo, he was a very talented reliever with the New York Mets for several years, but he always intended to want to try and start again, and the Mets never really gave him an honest opportunity at doing so, and because of that, he listed himself as a starting pitcher last winter, ended up signing a two-year deal with an opt-out after year one with the San Diego Padres, and had a pretty decent year as a starter. And Jordan Hicks is somebody who, prior to this past season, like, he was still a bit of a hybrid between a starter and a reliever. It wasn't until this past season where he was exclusively a reliever. I mean, when he first bursted onto the scene in 2018, he worked as a high leverage reliever for the St. Louis Cardinals, and he did that in 2019 as well. But this is also a guy who is a previous Tommy John surgery player, and he also missed most of 2021 with a significant elbow injury. So those are two obstacles that, you know, kind of hindered his ability to remain a starting pitcher. And those are also cases that, if you're the Blue Jays, you've got to be a little bit careful when you're considering extending him too, because if you look at comparables for Jordan Hicks, like, two names that I at least found that were Jose Alvarado with Philadelphia, who got a three-year deal I believe it was a 7.5 AAV, and then also Rafael Montero, a little bit older than Hicks, but similar value in terms of how Montero performed in 2022 and how Hicks did this past season. And Montero got a lucrative three-year deal with the Astros. So I probably would guess that Hicks, if he classified himself as a reliever, would fall somewhere in the middle between what Alvarado got and what Montero got. And from the Blue Jays perspective, like, it comes back to what I just discussed about Chad Green, where, you know, they're not a team that likes to invest a lot of dollars and a lot of term into relievers, and it's easy to see why. You know, like, they're not predictable. They're the most volatile position in baseball. Like, from year to year, it's hard to know what you're going to get out of most relievers. I mean, outside of the elites of the elite, right? The Jordan Romanos, the Josh Haders, who's a free agent this year, by the way, the Edwin Diazes, the Emmanuel Clase, Felix Bautista, that group. Outside of them, and even that class, you know, like it's still hard to predict what you're going to get year after year. So that's why it's not always a good idea to throw a ton of money and term at high leverage relievers. So again, if Hicks wants to be a starter, that takes him off the table entirely. But even if he sticks as a reliever, I don't know if the Blue Jays are going to be interested in paying him that type of contract to stick around. And that would obviously be disappointing because of what you paid to get Hicks, right? Like Adam Klopfenstein and Sam Reverse, like those are two respectable pitching prospects and two arms that very easily could have had an impact on this team in 2024 and beyond. So to not have either of them in the equation, to not have either of them factor into, say, that number five starter's position that will be up for grabs next spring, that's a bit of poor mismanagement poor asset management. But at the end of the day, like, had the Blue Jays gone on a deep playoff run, that value, that decision would have been offset by what you would have gotten from Hicks in the postseason rather than 2 months of regular season action and one playoff appearance. So, you know, in retrospect, had the Blue Jays known that they were going to flake out in the playoffs, sure, they probably wouldn't have made the deal to get Hicks. But hindsight's 2020, right? You obviously couldn't predict that the Blue Jays were going to get swept in the wildcard series for the third time in four seasons. But losing Hicks, whether it's because he wants to be as a starter or he prices himself out, that's another role the Blue Jays are going to have to fill, or another hole they're going to have to fill this winter. And I think looking at how their roster is constructed, you got to figure that they'll be looking to insert five or six players at least into this team heading into next year. Some of those spots they can probably fill internally, again, with a Spencer Horwitz, Addison Barger, Relvis Martinez, again, maybe a Ricky Tiedemann, but you still have a vacant third base position, a vacant outfield position, a vacant first base / DH role, a vacant, you know, number five spot, high leverage position, and you would like to be able to better utilize that 13th position player spot. So that gets you to six players right there. And, you know, even though the Blue Jays will have a little bit less money to spend after they figure out what they're going to do with Chad Green, as currently constructed, when we're looking at the Blue Jays' luxury tax payroll, or competitive balance tax payroll, as it's also known, right now they're sitting at just under $205 million. And for those who are unaware, the first luxury tax threshold is set at $237 million. The Blue Jays were a luxury tax team this past year for the first time in franchise history. And Mark Shapiro said during his end of season press conference that the Blue Jays are going to be in a similar position financially this year. So that would lead you to believe that they're going to remain a luxury tax franchise. And that will come with added penalties, right? They'll go from facing a 20% tax on their overages to a 30% tax. So it's only a 10% increase, not all that much. However, it will also come with some qualifying penalties as well, where if they lose a player, say like Matt Chapman, who rejects their qualifying offer, because they're a luxury tax team, the comp pick they end up receiving for Chapman, assuming he signs elsewhere and he receives a qualifying offer, would come after the fourth round. And if the Blue Jays end up signing a player who rejected a qualifying offer, and to me, based on the current crop of free agents, the only player that would likely, or the only player they'd likely be interested in or have a significant chance at signing who would get one, would be Cody Bellinger. And if they were to sign him, not only would they lose their second round draft pick, as they did last year when they signed Chris Bassitt, but they would also lose their fifth highest draft pick as well, and $1 million in international bonus pool money, which is a 500k increase on the amount they lost last winter for signing a player that had a qualifying offer issued to them. So it would definitely come with, like, not overwhelming added penalties, but certainly a slight increase as to what they were setting themselves up for last season. But this team is obviously committed to putting themselves in the best position to win a World Series, and to do that, sometimes you have to bite the bullet and pay into the luxury tax. And the Blue Jays core is getting more expensive, right? Bo Bichette is signed through his arbitration years. Vladdy's going to earn a projected $20.4 million through his second last year of arbitration. So this, you know, this young group who's, you know, not all that young anymore is starting to get a little bit more expensive. And with that comes added cost to your payroll. But despite that, you know, even after factoring in Chad Green's next contract, the Blue Jays will likely be in the window of adding $40 to $50 million in payroll this winter, which is a pretty nice position to be in on the surface. But when you also factor in that they have, again, five or six holes to fill externally, more, you know, maybe trim that down by a few, but still, you know, in that range, that money could get eaten up fairly quickly, right? Especially, again, if you wanted to make a serious run at Cody Bellinger, who is going to be looking to cash in on an MVP level performance that he had with the Cubs this past season. And especially considering the fact that, you know, wasn't that long ago that Bellinger was suffering to shake off that shoulder surgery that he had and got non-tendered by the Dodgers. So he's going to be probably chasing not only the best opportunity for him, but the biggest deal he can get for that desire to still be on a winning team. So that would probably run, you know, $25 to $30 million per year. And again, if the Blue Jays spending limits are in that $40 to $50 million range, if you commit that type of contract to Bellinger, you're going to have to, you know, fill in around the edges on that margin line. And that's not a desirable position to be in, but that's just the reality the Blue Jays are likely facing. So, you know, again, that's probably another reason why we don't see Matt Chapman return with this team, because it doesn't make sense to commit that type of contract to a guy you don't really know what you're going to get offensively out of. So, to me, I think the Blue Jays' best strategy here will be spreading that money around across multiple different players, and ultimately it's a thin free agent class for position players. So, you know, you're probably looking at spreading that money around to a number of different platoon type hitters, but, you know, given the flexibility that the Blue Jays have on their roster, that might not be the worst thing in the world anyways, because, you know, you look at it, just third base even, and it's like, okay, what options right now internally would the Blue Jays have for that spot? And you would have Kevin Biggio, who had some really nice defensive plays last year at third base. Davis Schneider spent a little bit of time at the hot corner as well. Addison Barger, too. You know, he's a versatile player, can play third base, right field. You know, Martinez hasn't spent too much time at third, but you could try his hand at that spot as well. But I think if you're looking through free agency, obviously there aren't anywhere near as many standout third base candidates beyond Matt Chapman, but somebody like Jaimer Candelario would be a name that would stick out. Somebody who can play third base and first, switch hitter as well. And he had a pretty solid season split between the Nationals and Cubs this past season, where, you know, he slashed 251, 336, 471, had 22 home runs this past season as well. Posted a 220 isolated power, which among qualified third basemen with at least 300 plate appearances, that was eighth highest in baseball. He also had a 117 WRC plus. He was a three-win player over 140 games. You know, he's nowhere near as gifted defensively as Matt Chapman, but he's got above average range, but below average arm strength, and pretty average speed. So it would be a step back from Chapman, but again, he wouldn't be the only contributor at the hot corner either, right? It would be more of a mix of different options at that spot rather than one everyday contributor. So, you know, there would definitely be a bit of give and take there. Obviously, right, you get a little bit more offense, but considerably less, you know, defensive reliability. But Candelario is also somebody that gives me a bit of pause, just in the fact that, again, you look at the third base free agent class and it's not strong whatsoever, right? So I think as it stands, Candelario is probably the second best third baseman available, or will be, in free agency at the hot corner behind Chapman. And, you know, for a guy who is 29 years old, probably looking for a 3 or 4 year deal, a lot of the things I see under the hood with Candelario, it scares me, and not in a good way. You know, like, he's got average plate discipline. He doesn't hit balls hard. He's really good at the point of contact, where his sweet spot percentage was, you know, in the 76th percentile. So, you know, that's well above league average. That's in the top quarter of the majors. But other than that, like, I just don't know how sustainable his performance will be as he crosses that age 30 threshold. Like, especially too, you look at his track record and it's pretty meh, right? He kind of had a breakout year with the Nationals and Cubs this past season. I mean, he had a really strong COVID season in 2020, where he slashed 297, 369, 503. But that was across 52 games, right? That's hard to judge over a full season. And you also look at the rest of his tenure with the Detroit Tigers, and it just, it left a lot to be desired. Like, it was pretty mediocre stuff. So I would have a hard time committing even a 3 or 4 year deal at, you know, $15, $20 million per year to Condelario. I just think the Blue Jays can do a bit better than him in that regard. You know, like Max Muncy could be an option for the Blue Jays, assuming he reaches free agency, but I think there's a decent chance the Dodgers end up exercising his $14 million club option, especially because he was almost a three-win player this past year, and he's got a ton of power with him. He had 36 home runs. His 263 ISO was third highest in the majors among qualified third basemen. So, sure, he doesn't hit for contact, but he doesn't strike out a ton. He gets a lot of walks, and he certainly makes up for his poor defense with his big power bat. So I don't think Muncy will actually end up hitting free agency. And, beyond Condelario, I don't like any of the other options that are out there at third base. So ultimately, the Blue Jays' best hope could possibly be through trade. Maybe looking at somebody like Ryan McMahon, maybe, who... Again, like, it would be determining how much or where the Blue Jays want to fall on the offensive-defensive scale here, because Ryan McMahon's defense is more valuable than his offense. And sure, he hits for power, but he strikes out a lot, and a lot of that power came at Coors Field last season. So, again, it's hard to judge how sustainable that really is outside of Colorado. So that would be risky there, but McMahon would definitely be somebody who could help fill the void defensively for Chapman. So it's just determining where the Blue Jays want to fall on that balance scale. We'll see, but there's not many good options there. Like, I think Patrick Wisdom would also be somebody, a potential trade option for the Blue Jays. But again, he's another guy who's really bad defensively, strikes out a lot, and is kind of just a boomer bust player, where if he hits the sweet spot, it's going to go a long way. But if he doesn't, he's essentially useless. So I think when we're looking at this situation beyond 2024, the Blue Jays ultimately will be better off if they're able to fill that spot internally. Like, at least when you look at the long-term projection, where it would be great if an Addison Barger or an Aurelvis Martinez could run with that position at some point next season and really show that that job is theirs. Like, they're going to be a pillar at that spot for many, many years. So, like, not only would that come with some assurance positionally, but financially, you would be way better off, because those guys are still, or would still be, pre-arbitration players. So they're not costing you anything. Or, well, I guess they will, but basically nothing. So, we'll see, but I really think the Blue Jays probably should aim more for a short-term solution at third base rather than a long-term solution, and hope that that long-term solution comes from within rather than externally. But in terms of the outfield position, because outside of Alan Roden, the Blue Jays don't have the same depth they do in the infield within the organization. So they're definitely going to have to look externally for help in that regard. And if they don't bring back Kevin Kiermaier, you have a number of different options here that the Blue Jays could go. You look at Cody Bellinger, obviously. Like, that's the top name that jumps out. But if you're not able to have him fall in your preferred price range, you could shift to the secondary market of, you know, platoon outfielders like a Joey Gallo, who I think would be a nice fit on the Blue Jays. I mean, he strikes out a lot, but he's still pretty reliable defensively. He can play the outfield a bit, first base as well, could factor in at third base. He's definitely a much better hitter versus righties than he is lefties, and you know, he would bring that presence from the left side of the batter's box. So you know, he could fill that type of platoon role against right-handed pitching, especially considering that he posted a .448 slugging percentage against right-handed pitchers last season. So that could be a potential option for the Blue Jays if they desired. I mean, I wouldn't want to put Jorge Soler in the outfield just because he's so, like, brutal defensively. Like, remember how many Blue Jay fans cringed watching Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. play the outfield? Well, it would be probably a million times. Well, maybe not a million. Maybe that's too harsh. But, like, twice as bad than those two watching Soler play the outfield. Like, he is pretty much a primary DH at this stage of his career. And same thing with Jock Peterson. But both would pack a lot of punch for the Blue Jays lineup. So, again, it gets back to, how much defense are you willing to sacrifice for much needed power? Like, that's, again, that's the balancing act that the Blue Jays are going to have to do this winter, just to determine, okay, where do we fall, right? Or do you want to go a little bit more towards the middle and shoot for somebody like Adam Duvall, who in a limited sample size with the Red Sox in 2023, performed really, really well at the plate. You know, he slashed .247, .303, .531, .116 WRC plus, a .284 ISO, which among outfielders that earned at least 300 plate appearances was third highest in the majors. And he's, you know, he's pretty average in a corner outfield spot, but he's certainly not going to hurt you like a Soler or a Peterson would. So that could be an option. Tommy Pham, maybe even. But again, that would get back to prioritizing offense over defense. Andrew McCutchen, even. But I don't see him leaving Pittsburgh. I just think that's where he's probably going to finish his career. Maybe a Robbie Grossman, who's, you know, had a respectable season with the Texas Rangers, but again, we get back to that platoon type role. Even a Jason Hayward, who had a really nice prove-it year with the Dodgers this past season, and hits from the left side of the plate, still, you know, somewhat reliable defensively, although he plays right field, so that may not be a fit considering George Springer is largely going to play that spot again next season. So those are a few of the free agent options that the Blue Jays could look to. But again, they could search through the trade market as well. You know, I've seen a few suggestions for a Jake Fraley from Cincinnati, who would be another corner outfielder added to this team, but would bring a little bit more offense to the Blue Jays lineup. He slashed .256, .339, .443 last season with the Reds, posted a .107 WRC plus, 15 home runs, 65 RBIs, a .188 ISO. Another left-handed bat, would perform better in that type of platoon role versus left or versus right-handed pitching. You know, was a 1.5 WAR player this past season. That could be an option. The Reds have a surplus of position players, so they would probably be motivated to move a player like that, especially considering the Blue Jays have a number of arms that would certainly be appealing to the Reds organization. So we'll see if anything comes out of that. You could also circle back to somebody like Lane Thomas, who I was among the most high on him at the trade deadline, and he would have one less year of team control, so maybe the cost would come down a little bit on him. But, you know, again, he would be an offensive first player, basically average corner outfield defense, but he was nearly a three-win player in 2023 with the Nationals, and he almost hit 30 home runs and drove in 86 runs while posting a 201 ISO. You know, that's certainly an appealing bat for the Blue Jays, without a doubt. You know, there are definitely a number of different options that the Blue Jays, you know, could seek out. Even a Connor Joe in Pittsburgh. I mean, I don't know if they'd be on board with moving him, but for a platoon type role, Connor Joe would definitely fit the mold for the Blue Jays. And when you're looking at, you know, that first base DH slash role, maybe the Blue Jays take a flyer on somebody like Rhys Hoskins, who's coming off season-ending ACL surgery, but almost flirted with the idea of coming back for the World Series with the Phillies, and he would definitely add a lot of power to the Blue Jays lineup. Despite not playing in 2023, he blasted 30 home runs with a 462 slugging and a 216 ISO, a 122 WRC plus, two-win player. He's okay defensively. He's about average, but I don't think he would be as bad defensively as, again, say like a Peterson or Soler. You know, he had three defensive runs saved in 2022 across nearly 1,300 innings at first base. Also registered at -6 outs above average. So, you know, that's not all that great either. And he does have prior outfield experience, but he's pretty awful defensively in left field and hasn't played there since 2018 because of that. So he'd largely just be first base slash DH. But, you know, like, that would kind of fall into the category of what the Blue Jays did with Brandon Belt last year, where they looked at the track record and they saw that he was coming off a significant injury and bet on him, and it paid off for the Blue Jays. And it, you know, if Belt ultimately decides he wants to continue playing, I'm sure he'll be able to parlay that into a lucrative, you know, 1 or 2 year deal in free agency. So maybe they take a similar approach with somebody like Rhys Hoskins. He wouldn't be a left-handed bat that they could insert to their lineup, but definitely a nice middle of the order type slugger that could help provide a little bit more protection for a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and help deepen the lineup a little bit as well in that power department. So, you know, I would certainly circle him on my list of potential free agents. But again, I think ultimately it will come down to what I've referred to a lot is, where do the Blue Jays want to take their identity on the position player side next season? Is it something where they want to find a bit more balance between hoping that their hitters who underperformed last year will regress to the mean a bit more and hit for more power, but also if you add a bit more power to the lineup, is that going to ignite your lineup more like you thought it was going to in 2023? And by doing that, how much are you going to suffer defensively, especially when you subtract a Matt Chapman and a Kevin Kiermaier? How far down the scale are you willing to go? That's what they have to determine between now and the start of free agency. Because, again, I don't envision a scenario where both Chapman and Kiermaier, or even either of them, are back on this team next season. And considering you're not going to find better defensive players than them in free agency or trade, or at least that are acquirable, you're going to have to figure out where you're going to be able to find that appropriate balance. That's the challenge, or one of the challenges that Ross Atkins and the Blue Jays front office will face this winter. There are obviously more hurdles that they will have to climb, especially on the pitching side, where they're going to have to look at replacing Jordan Hicks probably, and the free agent class of relievers isn't as good as it was in 2022, but the secondary market is pretty stacked with appealing targets below Josh Hader, so I don't think they should have any issues in finding a suitable replacement for Hicks. They also have some nice arms internally, like a Nate Pearson or a Connor Cook or a Mason Fluharty or even Hagen Danner as well, who we saw a little bit of before he went down for the year with that oblique injury. So I don't think they'll have to stress too much about that. And obviously, you know, you target a back end of the rotation starter as well, give you a little bit more depth, something the Blue Jays did not feature enough of in 2023, and hope that for the most part your starting rotation stays as healthy as it did in 2023. I mean, a lot of the time you're not lucky that way, but ultimately that's why it'll be important for the Blue Jays to go out and sign at least one starting pitcher. And it would also probably be a good idea if they fortified their AAA rotation a little bit more. You know, obviously you have Ricky Tiedemann to add to the mix there, and possibly Bowden Francis if he doesn't either win that number five job or return as the Blue Jays, you know, quote unquote, multi-inning reliever in the bullpen. But at the end of the day, that's an area where the Blue Jays have to prioritize, because if they run into a scenario where next season, say, Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, even Kikuchi, they're not able to log as many innings as they did this past season, the Blue Jays are going to be in a bit of a pickle. So they're going to have to find a way to help give themselves a bit of a safety net in that regard. So that, you know, if they have to subtract one from that four, or run into, you know, any other situations, you know, where, you know, something unpredictable happens like it did with Alek Manoah this past year, they're gonna have to find a way to fill those innings while still being competitive. So that'll certainly be on their list of to-do, or their to-do list this winter. But you know, without question, upgrading the position player group is going to occupy the majority of the mind space of this Blue Jays front office, and rightly so. And it will definitely be under the microscope the majority of the time for all of us who follow this team. So we'll see where things head. It'll still probably be a little bit of a quiet period over these next few weeks, but things will definitely start to pick up once that five-day period passes after the World Series concludes. So we will reconvene once that time comes and see where things are at. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.